good morning, good day, and good evening. I'm, as always, your host, Brody Robertson, and today we have a distro developer on from a distro that you probably haven't heard of. It's a fairly small thing, but I think the idea is really neat. Welcome to the show, Luna from Xenia Linux. How's it going?
Hi there. It's been going all right. How are you?
Oh, yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. We were talking before about what I was saying with the Nico loves Linux stuff, so that's pretty much been my last day or so. Besides that, though, pretty much just chilling. It's the weekend here, so it's 7:40 in the morning. I've got to go to my sister's place afterwards to feed her cat. Besides that, I got no other plans.
Fair enough. It's about 9 p.m. here. I've just been setting up some stupid thing with desk phones, actually, which is funny.
With what?
With desk phone, like SIP phones.
Okay.
So I thought, you know how, I know this isn't Linux related, but like...
Sure, no.
I wanted a surround sound system, you know, as you do. I thought, that's too expensive. So why not just buy 5 VoIP phones, connect them up, use pipe wire, so then you can make 5 SIP phone, like soft phones on your desktop. PipeWire handles it all transparently, set up a 5.0 surround system, it works great.
Sure. I haven't dug around doing weird things like that with PipeWire, but hey, if it works, it works, I guess.
Oh yeah. You literally, you can create a sync device with the surround stuff, and all your applications will just work, like, no config required. It's brilliant.
I thought the whole PipeWire video stuff was cool enough, but I'm happy that people are messing around with weird things like that as well, just to see what's possible. Because, you know, Pulse, how long have you been using Linux for?
Oh, 7 years, I think.
Okay, so what does that put you? 2016? Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
So well into Pulse, like, being not shit, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I started when I was really young, so it's like, my speaker's work time is happy.
Right.
Then when I started getting into more, like, pro audio stuff, it's like, Jack is a clusterfuck. Sorry.
No, you can swear. Go ahead. We're past the 7 second mark.
Yeah, Jack is awful to use, but PipeWire, like, emulates it perfectly, so it's like, you just use it.
Yeah, my understanding is with Jack stuff, things are weird if you start using, like, high-end plugins, and you have these, like, weird custom, like, I spoke to Umfa, for example, he's got this weird, like, custom professional audio setup, and things get weird then, but at least from what I've used of Jack through PipeWire, it's been pretty rock solid. Honestly, the only thing I really care about with PipeWire is the whole being able to, like, move things around with nodes. Like, just, like, my capture card, for example, when I was on Pulse, my solution was so jank. If I wanted to listen to audio from my console, I opened OBS and listened to the audio playback from OBS. It was not a good solution, because there was always, like, half a second of delay, but it worked. Yeah. Now what I can do is take the audio directly from the capture card and just redirect that to my desktop speakers, and it just works.
It's the same sort of thing with the desk phones. Like, I literally just get the output from the soft phones and just route it into the sync, and then it's like I can use a desk phone to talk to someone on Discord, which is like the most stupid thing, but if you don't have a mic like I didn't for a couple months, it was actually a decent solution.
So you just pick up the phone like, hey, how's it going?
Oh, yeah, that's how it was.
Okay, that's awesome. Wait, I'm sure this would obviously require a lot more work, but I'm sure someone could think of a way to make it so when you pick up the phone, it answers the call as well.
You can do this. So Asterisk, which is a PBX, you can set up custom extensions, which can just run arbitrary things. You could 100% just get something. Use like a GUI, like Python library to like click around on your desktop when you call that extension. it's doable.
There might be an easier... Well, if you use the custom... Actually, no, if you did it in the Discord web client, because that'd be easier to like get access to like the node graph. That would make it really easy, actually. You'd have some sort of...
Yeah, it's very doable.
Maybe you could make some sort of like extension that will then give you like a easy point to access. Why am I overthinking this? This is a really stupid, that's a really stupid idea.
Give me 3 months, I'll update you on it.
Well, speaking of stupid ideas, Xenia Linux started as a joke. I saw the Gentoo post. The Gentoo forum post.
I mean, everyone gets pronunciation wrong. That's fine. I don't even know if I'm saying it correctly. I say Xenia Linux.
Okay, sure.
It was a joke between me and my friend Jack. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we like make a Linux show? And I was like, well, not really. It's kind of stupid if you don't have an actual thing to set you apart. And then he just said, oh, you know this mascot Xenia? And I was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, do the math. Hello. Yeah, let's do this. So literally from a joke, we started working on getting Gentoo, which don't worry about pronunciation. I'll talk to you about that in a minute.
Okay, sure.
We got Gentoo. We put it in a Squash FS, which is what like live images use, mm-hmm. and just boot it. But when you say just boot it, you've got to think, how do I do that? Mm-hmm. Now, my solution at the time was, let's make a custom init RAM FS, which is, don't do that. So I spent about a month making a custom init RAM FS, which would only work on VMs with VertIO hard drives, because those were the only modules I loaded. And it would, instead of mounting the Squash FS, it would actually just extract it to the disk. So it would take about 20 minutes to boot. And then I realized you can do the same thing in Draker with about 2 command line arguments. Yeah.
20 minutes to boot. I feel like that's about the time it would take to boot a regular distro off of a tape drive.
That depends on how the date's on there, doesn't it? If it's like all scattered around, it might take a
bit longer. That's true.
I say 20 minutes, so that's probably just slow virtual hard drives, but yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm sure a lot of people don't know about the Xenia thing anyway, so I guess we can talk about that for a bit. So, most people know the mascot of Linux being Tux. I don't remember who actually drew that. Because Xenia was
Alan
McKay. Yeah, okay, so Tux was by Larry Ewing. Ewing? One of the two.
I don't know.
Ewing. Yeah. Probably Ewing. Yes. It's E-W-I-N-G. It's Ewing. Before someone crucifies
me. I'm sure someone will correct me.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, Tux is generally accepted as the mascot of Linux. However, as is often the case, there's usually multiple contenders at the time, people doing different things, and another one of them was Xenia.
Yeah.
So, when did you find out about this thing? Was it just when your friend was like, yo, here's this weird thing?
I knew about her for like a long time, because it's like this whole thing with her being a symbol of like the trans community and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's ingrained into different cultures. But yeah, not too long after we started on the distro, maximum 6 months. So yeah.
Okay, so it's just like I didn't even know about it. Like I found out about this when I searched for Xenia Linux. Because there's three things that come up when I search for it. One is your distro. One is the Xbox 360 emulator.
Yeah.
And the other one is this.
Yeah. We're, it's almost like a competition with the emulator to see who comes on top of a Google search. I think Xenia's on top right now, but yeah. Like the emulator's on top.
If you add Xenia Linux, it definitely is, because there's no currently Linux build of it, I believe.
Yeah, but you also get all the comment, like, Reddit posts of people saying, how can I run this on Linux?
That's true, yeah. If you search Xenia Linux, it's all Reddit posts. So you get, on Google, it's the wiki. It's not even the website for Xenia Linux.
Yeah.
Then a Reddit thread from 3 years ago, how to run Xenia online. I believe you... I think you can run it in a virtual... Wine, I think. Don't quote me on that. But...
Yeah.
I'm sure that's... Have you gotten comments from people being like, why is this called Xenia? What are you doing?
someone thought that it was a Linux distribution or the Xbox 360. Because of the, like, they thought it was, like, Linux running on the Xenia emulator, which is, like, it's a bit of a breach. I mean, I know Imolo talked about the 360. There's no way I'm...
No, I was going to say, that sounds like something Imolo had done.
Yeah, no. If it's anyone, it would be him. But, yeah.
So, most people seem to they read the Gen 2 part, and they at least... I guess think it runs on 360 one thing, but has anyone tried, like, confused what you're doing with that thing and come to the wrong place or something?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing that happens is most of our, like, 99% of our users are Gentoo users. And this causes some confusion because everyone wants to use Emerge. Like, absolutely everyone, the first thing they do is try to use Emerge.
Yeah.
And, like, while we've got wrappers for Emerge and stuff to integrate it with snapshots and stuff like that, it's kind of like using RPM OS tree on Fedora Silverblue. It's your last option. But people on Gentoo, because it's their first thing in their mind, you'll see users which have added like 50 packages to the base set. And then when they update the Xenia install, it just breaks like that. Of course, it's very easy to fix this because of the way we do it is an overlay. So what you can do is just disable the overlay, boot in, update everything, then you're fine. But yeah, it definitely causes a lot of confusion, but that's more of an issue of our docs not being great.
Yeah, Gentoo seems like a really weird base to, like, want to do an immutable system because, you know, how source heavy it is, how compile heavy it is. Like, yeah, if you go digging very lightly in any forums, like, hey, I use these compile flags, you should use this one.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So that's what just seems like a weird base to do it off of.
Okay, I mean, most of the base, again, was because it's a joke, was like, oh, we use Gentoo, let's do that.
Okay.
Gentoo has really good build tools. They have one called Catalyst, which is how they build their stuff. One that people might be familiar with is like DE Bootstrap. It's the same sort of thing, but like Catalyst is amazing. It lets you set like all the packages you want, your use flags, like everything, and also like config and stuff. So it's a good base because like the build is really good, like the build tools. Also, people say like all compile times are long on Gentoo. They're not if you've got good, like, decent hardware. So I think if I was to do a Xenia build now, because we, Gentoo, have got their bin host and everything, it takes, like, 20 minutes. It's not a long build time, obviously longer than other things. But, yeah, and also, like, they've got their binary kernels and stuff like that. So it's, like, we can just use them.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of years back I did a Gentoo install stream on... I don't know how long ago. I think it took me... Because I'd never installed it whatsoever, so I was reading the docs. You know, and the docs are incredibly extensive. One of the things I do love about this distro is it has by far the most extensive docs. Like, people talk about how great the Arch Wiki is, and the Arch Wiki is great, but I think that this one deserves the credit a lot more. I think it's just because... It's just because it's this source distro and a lot of people are like scared of looking at it, and a lot of people just don't realize how good it is. But because of my understanding is the reason why the project was made in the first place is basically to automate LFS, to like get you from that, you know, that bootstrap part into like just here is the baseline to start getting everything working. So you're gonna have a lot of control over like what you're doing. So you need good documentation for that. And it's clear that over the years that's been developed. But I think it took me about 3 hours to do everything. And that was mainly because I just didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, the best thing about the Gentoo Wiki by far is kind of the Arch Wiki has a rule that you can't really repeat yourself. So it links to every page links to loads of other pages.
Yeah.
Whereas the like Gentoo handbook is very like cohesive. It's all in one document. So it's very easy to follow. So like, but yeah, I see your point. Like when people were scared of Gentoo, because like I was as well. I only installed it for the first time like 2 years ago. Because that's a funny one because I got my new ThinkPad and I watched the Imolo streams. So he made a poll, which is a very fair poll of 5 options, which consisted of Gentoo, 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 and Gentoo.
Yeah, pretty good poll. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's very, very fair. Very, Very fair. And so I was forced to install Gentoo. Yeah, it's not as hard as people think. It's probably around the same difficulty as Arch, like if you're not doing Arch install.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
Okay, the thing about Arch install though, every other update Arch install breaks. Last time I used it, it just didn't work at all. The first time I used it, it didn't work at all. There was this brief period where it worked really well, but it seems like there's just always these massive changes being made to it. They're not really sure how much they want it to do, how they want it to do it. So, and I don't know how tied the UI is into the functionality, because it seems like every time the UI changes, some of the back-end functionality changes as well. So I'm sure I could work it out. It's just a Python script, but I have a feeling things are very, very coupled together.
I used that script once, and every time I made a choice that I wanted to change, I go to change it and it crashed the script.
Yep.
So
I don't know if you did you ever use it back when it first came out?
I didn't. This was after that.
Okay. When it first came out, it had zero error detection. So if you entered, so if there was a problem that was like, hey, yes or no, and you say P, it just crashed.
Yeah, that's like our old installer was like that. Our old installer was a bash script, and the way to change options was to edit the bash script. And like the most glaring issue. So for example, like if you attach like a SATA disk to Linux, it's going to be like SDA1 or SDA even. Whereas if you attach an NVMe, when you add a partition, it has like a P1. Well, we didn't account for that at all because like, you know, so if you put in like an NVMe disk to the first installer we made, it wouldn't work. And there was no errors at all. So it would just fuck up your disk. it was great.
And that's why we have virtual machines.
Heard. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, at this point, it only worked on virtual machines. So.
Right. Before you mentioned getting a new ThinkPad, do you actually mean a new ThinkPad or a new for you ThinkPad?
T410, quite old.
Okay, I was going to say.
Yeah. LLVM took around 2.5 hours, I think.
T410, where does that put us at?
2011
ThinkPad. Let me see the specs. Unless you happen to know the specs off the top of your head.
It'll be like a first-gen i5. And like 4 gigs of RAM mine has.
This is a terrible website. It says i7. That's not very useful. Thank you.
Yeah, I put a 13th gen i7 in my ThinkPad, obviously.
Here we go. i5 540M, i7 620M. I'm guessing it's either the 520 or the 540, one of the two.
Yeah, I've got like a 620, so I don't know. It's one of the two.
So A old CPU, but still relatively competent, I guess. Relatively.
It works. I mean, it was my first, like, intro to Gentoo, so it's kind of like, that normalized my brain's thinking, 3 hours LLVM. So it wasn't like it was long for me, it was just kind of, my dog's barking, sorry about that. So I think WebKit GTK, which is like the web engine for Lime stuff took roughly a day, I think. And if you can imagine building Xenia specs on that, which at the time started from a stage one, not even a stage three. So you'd have to do stage 1, 3, and 4. Mm-hmm. Probably took like 2 days to do a Xenia build.
Mm-hmm. So for anyone who hasn't done Gentoo, I guess I think most people probably assume it's going to be as slow as using something like the T410. Modern, what is your CPU on the system with the 40 series GPU?
I use a Ryzen 5 5600.
Okay, so it's a new CPU, but it's not like a high-end CPU.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's not even that new anymore, is it? They've released AM5 and stuff, so
my headspace is like 3 years ago, isn't it? When did that come out? Because I've got a 3600X, so mine's even...
Yeah, I mean, it'd be roughly equivalent to yours.
Yeah, like because at that time, the even numbers, I think, were the mobile chips.
Like 4000 series.
Yeah, well, yeah, desktop, yeah. 4000. Okay, I'm not finding the number, whatever. It's, yeah, it's kind of old now. I think, is 7,000 the current series, or is there a newer one after that?
Yeah, so it skipped 6,000 because that was, like, mobile, and then 7,600. Technically, there's 8,000 series now, but it's just, like, a single CPU, I think.
Okay.
So.
So, yeah. On that system, how long, if you, obviously, if you account for someone being new to the documentation, not really knowing what they're doing... Yep. How long do you reckon it would take a new person to install Gen 2 just from scratch? Assuming they have at least knowledge of how to use the command line, they know how to read, know.
I mean, if we assume they're going to use some, like, window manager to avoid web engine stuff, I'd say it's going to take anywhere from, like, an hour to 3 hours, depending on how used to, like, the command line you are and stuff like that.
Like, if you're coming from Arch or something like that, or you're used to using command line, it's not going to be...
Yeah, like, you could...
Yeah.
Yeah, you could be up with a desktop in, like, an hour. It's not too bad.
Mm-hmm. That is still, like... It's still a lot of time for some people, and it... I think the big thing that is scary for some is going from a distro where all of the stuff is pre-configured for you, and then going to something... You know, where it's just like, well, now I have to write a bunch of configs. Like, if I was to move over to Gen 2, nothing would change. I would install Hyperland, I would install all the same software I have, and I'll just git pull my configs. And I would have a system pretty quickly.
So I went from Fedora to Gen 2, so sort of the same sort of thing. But, like, you kind of get used to it as you go along. Like, you don't do everything at once. You kind of just get your desktop. Okay, cool. And then you figure stuff out as you go along. It's not like some big commitment where you've got to get everything right the first time. Mm. It's very, it can be, like, fairly easy, actually.
Mm. Yeah, I started way back on i3 when I first started. I think the only thing, I don't like manual tilers. They're not fun.
Neither, no.
I think the only thing with a window manager especially is just make sure that you have a couple of things set up. Firstly, application launcher, terminal. Assuming you have those on hotkeys, you'll be fine. Do not open up a window manager without at least an application launcher, especially ones where they don't have context menus, because you're just going to not be able to do anything. You're like, why do I have a black screen right now?
Or just Control-Alt, like, F3 into another TTY.
You could do that,
Who needs a desktop?
don't even have an application launcher. Just run the command to connect directly to the Xorg display and just open up applications like that.
All you need a window manager for is to display your desk, like, your background. Who needs anything else?
Honestly, desktops are a weird one nowadays, right? Because I assume that you have experience with using Windows in the past.
I do, but it's been so long that... It's, like, kind of a, like, weird memory.
Sure, the point I was going to get at here is, on Windows, it's pretty common to have a bunch of desktop icons. And, you know, by the time I stopped using Windows, I had less and less. But you see some people, and their entire desktop is covered in stuff. But nowadays, the idea of a desktop doesn't really matter, because, especially on Linux, none of the major environments have icons. It's just there to look cool.
I mean, like, I'm... personally very against desktop icons. I do not like them. Kind of like the whole metaphor of a desktop has kind of just faded away, like, especially since, because I'm quite young, it's like we never had that explanation of why it's called a desktop. It's just been called that because that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
well, I it's not gonna go anywhere, right? Like, I don't, unless you were to start, I don't know, I could imagine an environment where you always have an application open. Like, there is never a situation where it's closed. Like, actually, here's an idea. Maybe as soon as you close, like, the last application you have open, it just gets replaced with, like, a full screen app launcher or a terminal or something like that. There's never actually the concept of just fully being on the desktop. I know people have experimented with, like, weird designs. One thing I saw recently was this scrollable window manager where... Instead of having...
Oh, Paper WM?
I think it was based on that. It's called Niri.
Okay.
Or maybe I get it backwards, and Paper WM is actually... Is that the GNOME extension, or is that...
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It's based on that. This is like a standalone window manager.
Oh, yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, though, it's this idea, instead of having a window manager where you have these explicit workspaces, the windows are just placed next to each other and you scroll like horizontally along. So it gives you a lot more space to work with. And it's just a different way of computing. Like, I haven't tried it out myself. I don't know if I would like it or not. But yeah,
I tried it and it's like, it just didn't work with multi-monitor when I tried it. So it's like, I couldn't get it to work. But it looks cool in theory, I think.
This one, I believe, explicitly treated each monitor as a separate workspace.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But, you know, there's only so much you can do with an extension to an environment.
Yeah.
This one was like a standalone Wayland compositor specifically built to do this.
No, I mean, on Xenia, we only really support GNOME and Plasma. Mm-hmm. We do have Hyperland coming, which might excite quite a few users. I do actually have it running, not on my main desktop. The reason we do it, though, is like GNOME is what I've always used. So it's like, it's very easy for me to like debug that. Like when you're a distro developer, it's kind of like, you can't go too far from what you do because you can't test it adequately. Like, if I'm not using this thing every day, I'm not going to be able to find the bugs that other users are going to find.
Yep.
Like, and Plasma, for example, I wasn't planning on doing Plasma, but someone just PR'd, like, MR'd it into our GitLab. Mm-hmm. So it was like, cool. And then it's like, oh, now I have to use this to make sure I know it's working.
Right.
So then it's me forcing myself to use Plasma for like a week. It's not fun.
I understand you having used GNOME from the start, but what is it you don't specifically like about Plasma?
It's not that I don't like it as a desktop. Mm-hmm. It's I'm so used to GNOME that I have to make it feel and look like GNOME. That extra like config I have to do is just like... And the slight differences just really annoy me. And it's like, it's nothing to do with KDE being objectively bad or anything, because of course it's a great desktop. It's just like, personally, I cannot use that desktop.
And when you were using Fedora, you said Fedora before, yeah?
Yeah.
Were you using like a fairly stock version of GNOME, or did you have some extensions?
Like, I mean, even right now, I probably have like 3 extensions. I just love GNOME. Like, it just works so well for me that it's like, I mean, I used to be on Mac for a long time, so it's like, it's quite similar in that way, in how everything just works like perfectly fine. It's like what I would, it's what I imagine as like a proper Linux desktop, because it's like everything just works. It's great.
That is a very interesting take, because I will often hear the exact same thing being said as a bad thing.
Yes, it's an opinionated desktop. It's you're either going to love it or you are going to hate it with your life. You are, you know, it's like, it's especially like, this is why GNOME, the community, gets a lot of flack. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do something that they don't agree with. Like, if you like try and say, oh, I want this feature, if they say no, it's not going to happen, because it's like, this is how they want it. And it's like, I see why people... then it's like not good, because they're not catering to what I want. But then again, it's like, it works so good for the people who use it that it's just like, you know, it's a great desktop all around, really.
Yeah, I don't think everything has to cater to everyone. Like, it's, you know, no one would go to a window manager like DWM and be like, hey, why are you not catering to the GNOME users? Like, for anyone, I'm sure most people know DWM. This is a window manager where you configure it by changing the source code and patching the code. Like, this is not made for most people, but it is made for the DWM fans. Hyperland is this, you know, it's got a bunch of fancy compositor effects and all of this neat little, like, all of these neat things, and it doesn't do manual tiling, for example. But that's okay, because it's made specifically for what this group of people want, and that's the same with GNOME. I think the thing with GNOME, though, is it's more explicitly opinionated. Whereas,
100%.
Like, KDE is going to have a bunch of use cases where people, you know, I've had discussions with KDE devs where every single one of them thinks that single click to open is a better way to handle files instead of double click to open. And even if that's the case, they're like, okay, we understand that most people are just switching to double click anyway. Let's just make this the default. Distros are shipping it with double click to open. So let's just make this the default. But they still have their opinionated design decisions. is just... I think the other thing with GNOME is they are... A lot of the big people in the project are very active in social media, so it's a lot easier to see what the opinions are.
Yeah, and also with GNOME, the only thing it really gets compared to is KDE. So it's like, you're comparing it to this thing which is like ultra-configurable to something that is like set as it is, and people are just like, they see that and they think that GNOME needs to be KDE, where it doesn't. Like, that's how people like think about it. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy that GNOME does the way they do. I don't particularly like a lot of the design decisions that GNOME has, but I'm happy that somebody is doing it. I'm happy that somebody is like, you know what? Let's actually have a strong design team. Let's have a strong design language. We don't really care for theming. We are going to do our thing. There's going to be things missing. And that's okay. Where I do take issue, I've mentioned this plenty of times, is where that starts to butt heads with the like more open sort of spaces where it's like, you know, people involved in the Wayland project, you'll often see some KDE devs who are like, hey, let's do this thing, and the GNOME devs are like, no, this won't fit in GNOME. And like, we're not talking about GNOME, we're talking about Wayland. Like, let's do this.
A big thing of that is like the DRM stuff for like VR.
Mm.
GNOME, like on Wayland, does not have like DRM stuff, because my understanding is I'm not a Wayland dev, I don't understand this very well, but like in KDE and WL roots, it's integrated into the protocol itself, I think, whereas GNOME wants to make it as a portal, and this discussion has been going on for like 4 years.
The portal, okay, are you actually slightly behind on the fun here?
Am I?
Yes, so they wanted to make a portal, and then they realized the portal was a bad idea, and now they're making a protocol to be the back end for a portal.
Nice. Right.
Yeah, it's a mess. Also, on Valve's documentation, they specifically mentioned installing KDE as a fix for this. Also, when you said DRM, we're not talking about digital rights management, Direct Rendering Manager. It's annoying that they're the same thing. Same with DWM. I mentioned DWM on Windows sometimes, which is their window manager. I think it's
called... Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's called... What is it? DWM Windows. Desktop Window Manager. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So they have that, and then there's the DWM Linux project. I think they've called it DWM Linux on Windows since, like, XP or something. Right, something like that. Yeah, it's been a while, but... Yeah, the VR stuff's a fun one. I don't know when that one's going to be solved.
It's going to be a while, I think. I mean, even like as of recently, like Steam Link has come out for like Quest headsets, but that only works on Windows. So it's like the only reason I even have a Windows install at this point is for VR. It's that
I think that's cool.
Yeah, just like, you know. I've got a Quest, so I may as well, you know.
Right.
But it's like, it's that one thing. Like, people will say in the comments, I'm sure, about ALVR and stuff like that. I've tried so hard, and it's that one thing that's keeping me having to use a Windows install.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think that's probably why a lot of people don't switch to Linux in the first place. It's like, there's always that one thing. I mean, for a lot of people, it's like online gaming, you know, Creative Cloud and stuff like that. Yeah, for me it's VR.
Yeah, I specifically, when it comes to online games, I don't play that many in the first place, but when I do, maybe I'm just lucky, but the games I've chosen have pretty much always worked well on Linux. I'm playing like a lot of Path of Exile right now and Monster Hunter World, both of which don't have anti-cheat. Path of Exile, I don't think it has anything. Like, if you look at that chat, it's a mess. I don't think they have any like any checks on names either. So people just have the wildest... Like, it's not going to be any, like, racial slurs, because that will get you banned, but there is... So a lot of people will make jokes on crowd control and call their character, like, something cock, this cock, or you go to someone's hideout, and the teleport point is just inside, like, a giant bikini anime girl. It's just like... Clearly nobody's moderating this game. The devs are from New Zealand, so I guess they just don't care at all. They're like, whatever. They're not hurting anyone, just leave them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But that's a fun one, isn't it?
Yeah. Linux is a fun space, right? Like, it's nice to see when things, you know, go well. There's all this cooperation, but maybe it's just a me thing, but I do enjoy just digging through the absolute hellscapes. There's a lot of these threads. Because I've talked about the Wayland icon thing, the icon protocol, and I've slightly getting involved in that thread. Now I just keep getting emails where it's like, within 5 minutes, there'll be 20 emails still talking about, hey, should we let Windows set icons? It's like, how are we still having this discussion? How? Stop. Yeah. Yes, we should. I think they've now agreed that setting icons is a good thing, and they're now arguing about what the file format of the icon should be. Should we use SVG? Yeah. Should we use PNGs? Like,
yeah.
Stop.
Talk about, like, it's a bit unrelated. Talk about weird things in the Linux space.
Mm.
So, know how MLO has done Gentoo on weird things?
Yes.
Well, I bet he didn't say about Gentoo on the 3DS. Me and Imlo have this thing where we try and one-up each other all the
right.
time. So he posted about his PS2 or whatever, you know.
Sure, sure.
Standard stuff, you know. PS2 has a Linux install anyway. I'm sure it wasn't any effort at all, you know. So I did it on the 3DS. I cheated, right? It's a CH root. It's like I downloaded a stage 3 and CH rooted into it. So I've done no work at all. Posted it on like the big subreddit. It's got like 2K upvotes.
Oh, God, wait. I wonder if I can find it.
You probably can.
From about a year ago? Or is it someone else doing it?
I think I'm the only one. If it's just like Gentoo on the 3DS, it's probably why I put time on it.
Yeah, that's what it's called. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit of a running gag.
That's so stupid.
Yeah.
I wonder how long it would actually take to do the compilation with the 3DS. Ooh.
Well, you can't. So, okay. The SD card drivers are read-only.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can if you set an overlay, but you're going to run out of RAM like that. So, it's like very hard to do. Oh, there is a way. The 3DS has infrared. You can get an infrared receiver on your desktop and use that to set up a network. So, then you could run like NFS over the top of that.
Do you know what you could also do? Not install Gentoo on your 3DS.
Oh, I should probably explain why I've been saying it wrong.
Fine. I assume that maybe you were saying it right and I'm saying it wrong.
No. Emilio was saying it like that for the longest time.
Okay.
And I learned Gentoo from him. So he has infected me with that pronunciation. I cannot get rid of it. And then when he got in touch with like all the Gentoo devs and that, he switched pronunciations on me, making me look like the one who's been saying it wrong all along.
Well, you know what, you're already in this deep, might as well just keep going.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're not the only person that says it. I'm sure there's got to be someone else out there.
100%.
If there's people out there who... actually, here's a fun one. I've noticed that a lot more of the newer people that come to Linux base have no idea that GNOME is GNOME. Like, people are like, why are you saying it as GNOME? Yeah. It's pronounced GNOME. I'm like,
yeah, I've had these conversations in real life, yeah. Like, you'll be using it, and you're like, oh, that's cool. You're using GNOME. They're like...
It actually has infected... On the rare occasions I need to mention a GNOME... It has infected my speech a couple of times. Same. Yeah. Mate hasn't, luckily, because mate is such like a common word here. But
oh yes, I know.
It's gotten very close to.
Yeah, I think I still say it as mate. I don't like alter my pronunciation on that.
Put an accent on it. If you want it to be mate, put a little squiggly line above it. Exactly. Otherwise, it's mate. Exactly. You have it on your keyboard, work it out. I'm sure you can do it.
Yeah, we use that word like every 5 minutes here. It's like we're not going to change pronunciation just for some desktop environment.
I think there also might be... have you seen Mr. Robot?
Yes, yes, I have.
Okay, I was gonna say if you hadn't had, I was gonna say, had you at least seen the scene from the pilot, the executive running no.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, I bet you're wondering why I'm using. Yeah, it's great show, by the way. Don't watch it. Watch it. It's a brilliant show.
I've seen all of the seasons except the last one. I've been saying I was gonna watch the last one for a while, and I just didn't. I even like, but I can go play Monster Hunter, or I can go do this.
It's mental, yeah. That's if I work. Go watch season 4 of Mr. Robot.
I have a ton to do this weekend. Maybe I'll check that out. Actually, how many episodes in the final season? Maybe I can't watch it today.
It's about the same as the rest.
Mr. Robot season. Maybe watching it all in one day is a bit much.
Yeah. That's a weird thing. In Mr. Robot, they have this like command line utility
mm-hmm.
with like AST2 or something. And it's like, it's used to do like normal, like basic commands like copy and like LS. It's like this weird thing. So people have actually tried to recreate that as like a script from the small like scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see if that's the right thing. ASTU. People have like documented it.
Yeah, I found the door. Okay, what?
Yeah.
Elliot used a command in the show called ASTU. I've never seen this command, so I searched for it and found a blog on Fedora 19 that pays homage to Mr. Robot and the utility. Yeah. What?
Yeah, it's mental.
Wait, that's just so like, weird. Because
yeah,
a lot of the rest of it is just like actual command. Why is there just this random command that's just not real?
Yeah,
maybe it's like, just a script he has in his system.
Yeah, he does seem like the sort of person to make himself.
ASTU trace PID 34. What? ASTU yeah. LS. Okay.
Did you not notice this?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I didn't notice this at all. Also, I love this path that he has. LS root / F society. Like, why is it just a random root folder inside of your like your dump file?
Oh yeah, no, that plays a part in the plot, so I won't no spoilers here. But yeah, that's mental.
It's been a while since I watched it. Maybe I just forgot about that part.
It's very early on and they don't use it again, I don't think.
But the problem with Mr. Robot is, you know, there's especially early on where it's like Elliot's just tweaking out the entire time. What's actually going on in the story?
Well, yeah, but the great thing is like Mr. Robot gets better on every rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've watched it like 4 or 5 times, and I like in one of the first episodes they leak the ending of season 4.
Okay. Huh.
I won't go into that because obviously you need to watch it, but like, yeah, it's mental.
Yeah, I watched the first season back when it very first came out with my sister. But I never got to continuing it after that. And then I came back to it like 5, 6 years later, however long it's been since the first season came out. Probably, it came out a long time ago at this point. And when I watched the first season again, I was like, oh, this is actually really, really good. Like, even though I knew a lot of the stuff that was going on, because of like how much, like especially when you haven't really clicked on like the full overarching story that's going on, there's like a lot of little details you just don't pick up on the first time. We're like, oh,
yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
maybe just rewatch the entire thing from the start again.
Yeah. It's like you need a lot of the context from like previous season.
That's true. That's true.
But yeah.
But speaking of weird commands, this website you have is I love the website for Xenia Linux.
The only issue with it is it's shit as a website because like how like it's just loads of links. You want to see the new one?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, someone's making it for us called Mitsune. They're very nice. The new one is a lot more informative. This, again, this is like staging. It's still
yep.
Some stuff isn't done, but yeah, it's
this is an actual website.
Yeah, instead of just here are four links and
this
a
is
terminal.
It's neat. I like the command line here. It's a cool idea, right? And like, you know, there's a couple of commands here you can run. It's just not great for showing off the project.
No, it's awful. You said that to them. They're like, okay. Yeah.
I just tried running a bunch of random commands to see what commands were there. I was like, LS works. Okay, what else can I actually do here?
Yeah, like there's like three commands at work. It's like, it's not even fully featured.
So
our main website is Wiki. So.
I like how you say that, but the other day I had someone on. He's making a hacking game where it's like really. So you know how a lot of hacking games are very, like, they hide a lot of the details about like network structure and stuff. He's going like super deep with it. He's re-implemented like three layers of the OSI stack. He's basically made Wireshark the game. But also, he ported the Suckless Terminal to Unity, along with porting Bash over to it. So he has a full Bash shell inside of Unity.
That is insane. Oh, I love that.
So, you know, there you go. That's for the website. Do that.
Yeah. I mean, you can, actually, with WebAssembly. You can run, like, full-on x86 emulation.
Did you see the recent, there was at Foston, there was a talk about Greenfield, which is a Wayland compositor for the web.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
it
supports X-Wayland, so you can literally run X-Wayland in your browser and run full desktop applications in it.
Oh, I found the GitHub. Oh, that's cool.
It's wild.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I wanted to try really to like, bring the dev on ages back, but he never got back to me about it.
Oh, that's sad.
But yeah, it's an HTML5 Wayland compositor for anyone who doesn't know. It's still fairly early on, and it's like it's a long work in progress, but things like this are so cool with WebAssembly.
This is completely unrelated, but I wanted to talk about this because, right. So, as you know, in a distro, you obviously have to have stuff to be able to build it.
Sure.
So you need to have build servers. The issue with that is obviously I don't have proper servers really.
Mm-hmm.
So here's how, Xenia Linux solved this incredible issue. I bought some like rack mount servers.
Okay.
And I went into my college with them. They didn't know. And they have like two Cisco racks because they're not Cisco well. Took some of the routers out, put them on top of the rack, racked our servers in, connected it up to the internet, got some IPs. And then after we did it, we were like, can we run this? And they're like, sure. So then that's how we have build servers. But like, oh, it's a mess. This is like quite. Yeah, but like, so Catalyst is the Gentoo build tool, and I'm going on a tangent. Oh, sorry.
The entire show's been a tangent. Don't worry about it.
With Catalyst, it sort of creates a CHROID, so it mounts like /dev and /proc and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs loop devices, which normally like allows for easy, right? But when you run it in we use GitLab. When you run it in the shared GitLab runner, the /dev is read only, so you can't make loop devices. And also there's like loads of other restrictions. So what we've had to do is like patch Catalyst to like be able to use a separate like /temp/dev instead of normal /dev. And like, yeah. And also to make it a bit quicker, we've sort of patched the official bin host into Catalyst. So instead of having to compile everything on Catalyst, it has like a local package cache. You can just pull straight from the mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it makes it quicker, but it's a lot of patching. And like Catalyst is it's all in Python and Bash. So it's a bit of a mess to try and like figure out how to patch.
You mentioned loop devices in there. So, yeah. I see these loop devices every time I try to use a snap. What is a loop device? What does it do?
I don't actually know. I know that I know that like when you mount a squasher fest or like an ice or something, it's gonna use a loop device. Mm-hmm. That is my extent of the knowledge because people probably won't know this. Xenia Linux, your whole system is one singular file. It is a squasher fest that gets mounted. So, which is cool because like I could reboot right now, select like a KDE one, and I'll be in KDE with all my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So like it's useful for that. It also means like if an update doesn't work, you just kind of reboot and like go to the other one. It's different to like most immutable distros, which are going to be using like OS tree, mm-hmm. which is like Git for file systems. It's mental. You mount the squasher fest, it uses a loop device. I don't know what a loop device is. Probably some magic in my like CPU, you know.
That's about okay. Good. I'm happy that you don't know any more about it than I do.
Yeah.
Maybe you bring a snap developer on and they can answer the question.
Oh god, then I'd like to see the comment section of that podcast.
Oh, it'll be exceptional, without a doubt.
Yeah. People seem to think like to develop a distro you need to be like mind. Like most of my work is like I add a package to the Catalyst spec file and it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then yeah, it's like I'm not particularly like skilled in Linux. I just know how to get around the terminal.
Mm-hmm.
But I think like if you've got an idea, it'll take you like 90% of the way there.
Right. Yeah, honestly, a lot of distros aren't that crazy. Like, obviously, if you're doing something like Vanilla OS, like, that's obviously a big endeavor.
Yes.
Blend OS, you want to make Gen 2. Like, Gen 2, like, that's a big endeavor. You're making a whole new package manager, all of this stuff. But a lot of distros are basically just a ISO of someone's config, effectively.
Yeah. I mean, the lucky thing with us is, like, if you're doing a distro like Fedora or Debian, you're making your own package. You have to package every single package that someone wants to use. Whereas we just kind of say, use Flatpak or use DistroBox, it's like, we just have to work on making the system work good, like Gentoo work well as an immutable system, and everything around that, like user space utilities and stuff, like how do you update the system? Which, by the way, used to be a manual process. You used to just download the new Squasher Fest and reboot. I'm going to go on a rant here.
Okay.
I'm very sorry about this.
No, go ahead.
So, Draper, which people might not know, this is the thing that creates an initramfs in Fedora, mm-hmm. and also the Gentoo disk kernel uses it by default. If you're on Arch, you probably wouldn't have used it as you use the Arch ones or whatever it's called. You know, like, update initramfs. I don't know. Anyway, so we use Draper to mount the Squasher Fest. There is an option that if I open a terminal quickly, at my proc command line, there is a one called rd.live.overlay.overlayfs equals one.
Ah, okay, now, yes. Very convenient.
That used to be a zero.
Okay.
And then we updated, and you would get thrown to a Draper emergency cell. So this is when we're doing manual updates as well.
Right.
So we obviously did not push this image because, you know, and the way I figured this out was the worst thing, because this was when I was initially doing the ARM64 builds for Xenia. And I thought, oh, maybe my frame buffer just isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't, right? On the Mac OS VM or whatever, it doesn't work. So I just thought, oh, it's taking its time. Come back 30 minutes later, still got a black screen. So I open a serial console and I see the like dreaded, you know, you're in emergency shell. And it's like, it's one of those issues where you don't know what's going on like at all. So I just, on the off chance, go, okay, I'll change that to a one. And it just boots like that. And it's like, I don't know what's going on because the Draper documentation is like awful. I'm sorry about the people who make it, but it's just not great. This is also why I spent a month making my own one, because I didn't realize it could do the things we needed. So you don't know what's going on, you change it. And then, so that means we had to make a user space utility to do updates, because mm-hmm. we needed to update Grub at the same time,
mm-hmm.
which on Xenia is weird because you have to go into CH route to do it.
So if somebody wants to update now, what is the process of doing so?
So you would type sudo fox update, and so I'll type that now. You type in your sudo password if you've got one. And then it will just say like what you're using, and an update is available. Run this command to update.
Mm-hmm.
And you run fox update tag u, and then it will just update for you. You just reboot.
That's much simpler.
Yeah, everything like around Xenia now is like we've got the basics done. It's just making it seamless for users. Like, we don't want a user to have to make a CH route to update their grub. We want to do that automatically.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want a user having to edit the install file because they use an NVMe drive, right? But it's like, you know, half of my work now is like making Python utilities to do this because I know Python.
So, obviously, there's a lot of documentation around immutable Fedora. There's a bit of documentation around immutable Debian now. Was there anything on immutable Gentoo?
No. Okay. So, a lot of immutable distros use something called OS Tree,
mm-hmm.
which I've looked into. It looks so complex that I just, not an option. Mm-hmm. It's essentially Git for like a file system. It's very weird. We had to just come up with a way to do it. So it was like, okay, how do we get this to work? So we need something to boot and it needs to be read-only. I was like, oh, that's too easy. Let's do something weird. So what do live images use? Okay, they use SquashFS. Okay. Let's make a manual Gentoo install, SquashFS that, and then try and boot it on the same system. And every time I make a change, I have to undo the SquashFS, make a change, like chroot into it, make a change, SquashFS it again, and reboot. It took forever. And this was when I was building the custom init RAM FS. It took ages, right? But yeah, we did that. And then we got a system that was read-only. So you go into it, you log in, you can't do anything. It's great. And, you know, we had Flatpak installed, but we didn't have a desktop, so you couldn't use it. It was a perfect system. So our first release was, like, bare minimum had GNOME. / etc was not writable. / var was not writable. Well, that was writable, but as an overlay, so it disappeared when you reboot.
Right.
So you couldn't add users. You couldn't change your password. The only thing you could do was install Flatpaks. That was our first release.
Okay.
We very quickly realized maybe that's not the best, you know, on multiple levels. So then we worked on like, okay, there's some weird things because the way we do things is called an overlay, which is when you boot a live image, it creates an overlay in RAM. And that's how you have it to be writable. So we do that, but store it persistently. So the issues you come into is like, if your base system updates something, your overlay is always going to take precedent on that. So if we just had an overlay over the whole system, say if you install some package, but then the system updates and your version is out of date, but something is depending on that newer version being there, right? I know this is a bit all weird. Your system will then just not boot. But it will boot, but it won't. You won't be able to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, as I said, the issue of people just using Emerge. So the way we sort of tackle that is, how do we get this to be a pleasant experience, but also doing all the safeguarding we can? And luckily, Portage has a thing called Sense. So if you've done Gentoo, you know you emerge at world. Mm-hmm. Now, at world is a sense. It's basically a list of packages. So what we do is create a custom set called at Xenia.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a wrapper called Fox Merge. Everything's Fox. It's kind of a theme. So if I run like Fox Merge now, I'll do sudo fox merge list. We don't need a sudo there. But anyway, it'll just list the packages I have.
Mm-hmm.
So it means when people go to update it, instead of updating at world and completely screwing your dependencies over when you next go to update, we only update the packages that people install themselves. So, right. I mean, like, in a nutshell, that's kind of how Xenia is progressing. It's just, like, trying to make this work well.
Mm-hmm. This started as a meme.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And
I'm in too deep now. It's like, this is what I do now. Before this, I just used Fedora and I was happy, and now I make Xenia Linux. yeah. So, always fun.
So if people want to install applications, what is the like suggested way?
Yeah, so we have a wiki document on this. I can send you this. So
I found the link already. It's all good.
Yeah, yeah. So first off, if there's a Flatpak, please use Flatpak because it's like it's gonna be the best way to do things. It's Flatpak works well. You know, it's actually recommended on Gensu for stuff like Steam. And then you've got so if you're installing like a CLI application, right? Like Flatpak isn't the best for that. So we have this thing called DistroBox. If you've used Fedora Silverblue, you know Toolbox. DistroBox is very similar. It just lets you have different distros as well. So you can do like, I don't know, Ubuntu, for example. DistroBox is really cool because like I can have the, yeah, it is super cool.
When it first came out, I was going to get Luca on the show and things just didn't work out. We were both busy and it just never happened. But yeah, DistroBox is awesome.
Apart from like the surface level stuff of like, oh, I can have the AUR on my Xenia system.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can export applications and have them appear in your desktop and just work. Like, for example, I needed the Mega client for something. I think it's got a Flatpak, but I didn't realize. I installed it in a DistroBox, exported it, and now I can just go in my like application menu and just open it, and it will just work. Like, even if the container isn't started yet, it'll work. And then you can also do like development on it because you can give it root privileges, like which is like privileged in Podman or Docker. So if I want to build a Xenia stage manually, I can just go into a Gentoo environment like that. Like I have an alias set. I type G and now I'm in Gentoo.
Mm-hmm.
It's like DistroBox is cool. And then if all else fails, you've got FoxMerge, which is using the system portage and overlaying that on top. An important thing to note with Xenia, you are never editing the system directly. It's always an overlay.
Mm-hmm.
So if something does go wrong, we have a recovery mode, which basically just turns off the overlays and boots you into essentially what is a live environment. What is really cool about this, my ThinkPad, when we were setting up like encryption for Xenia, I completely converted it without a USB or anything from a normal ButterFS install to Luke's on ButterFS. Like, without a stick at all. It's a lifesaver sometimes.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yes, DistroBox, I think, has really changed the... has changed the game for immutable systems. Because before DistroBox, there are overlay... But I can't speak of every system, but I know with OS Tree, if you start heavily using the overlay, it will really slow down your update process.
And also, OS3 handles it very nicely with like etc, because it does like a three-way merge. Like say on Xenia, if you do that and something in etc gets fucked, like because your overlay always takes precedent, it can really break things. Right. So it's like you've got to be careful.
Yeah, and you know there are Flatpaks, there are snaps. You know, you can do these little things, but then DistroBox comes on. Like okay, so now you can have. Well, you could already do it before, right? Like, Docker and Podman were already there. But, like, who wants to make a Docker container? No one wants to do that. That's stupid.
Okay, well, apart from me.
Sure. Okay, someone wants to do it. But, like, most people, I will look at Docker for, like, one specific thing, and I'm like, okay, that's all. I don't really know anything else. Here it's like, okay, so we set up Docker, we set up Podman. It also supports Lilypod, which I don't know. Oh, that's Luca's thing. Okay, it's a new thing that Luca made. Okay.
Oh, yes.
I don't know why he made another one. Sure, whatever. But it supports those things. But also, it's not just a Docker container. It's a Docker container that nicely integrates with your host system, which isn't the way Docker works out of the box. So you can now run a full... You can install a application from Ubuntu when you're on Fedora, and... It just works. If you're on an immutable system, you can have this totally fine immutable system, and then in your writable area, just have the AUR and just install it like anything else. And if something breaks, just delete it. Nothing bad happens. Something bad can happen if you start messing with your home directory. Keep in mind it will access your home directory, so don't use something stupid for that. But like,
if you use root, you can also, you know, DD your block device if you want.
Yeah.
It's just nice.
But like, if an application breaks, like you're not gonna break your entire system. You mentioned DD there. I saw a disgustingly terrifying command the other day.
Please send this to me.
I'll send you the command. Where is it? There was someone, or I think a Stack Exchange, asking, "What does this do? Like, what will happen if I run this?"
Oh no!
They said, "Is this safe?" Yeah. If you have to ask, "Is this safe?" Usually the answer is no.
You just run it and find out. Oh, that's nice. That is brilliant. I might run that and see what it does. Actually, not now, obviously.
So the command for anyone listening is dd input file slash dev slash urandom output file slash dev slash memory. Yeah, this is basically going to rewrite your RAM with random data from urandom. Do not run this. You will probably break your entire system. You may break the hardware. I cannot confirm whether you will or not, but you might.
I wonder what the chance is of it completely replicating what's already in memory. I need someone to work that out, because that would be funny.
That would be pretty funny. Actually, here's the more fun version. This is the Russian roulette version.
Oh, I've seen this. Yeah. Oh! That is great. I love that. I should put that in Xenia as like a thing that's installed.
Yeah, I'm sure the one person, just make it like 1 in 100,000. No one's gonna see it for a while, but you know, someone might see it.
Yeah, don't doubt the stupid things I've done with Xenia. Like, Xenia is cool because like I can do like the most stupid things I want with it. Like, I used to run it as a server. Like, I just made a custom spec for Arcanine. And it's like, it takes like 2 seconds to make. It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, talk about DistroVox. Sorry, I love it. I'm addicted to DistroVox. It's mm-hmm. like, not only can you do that, you can pass through NVIDIA GPUs. So like, you can, without using root, like, so I can run like LLMs or whatever I want mm-hmm. on like my NVIDIA GPU using a DistroVox. It's like, it's the coolest thing.
It has
like config. You can just make your distro boxes as, I think it's an I9,
mm-hmm.
and just like take that config wherever you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's super cool. I one of the things I think is neat is you can just, if you want, run a window manager from it. Like, it's fine.
You can. Yeah. So I did try it. It was a bit weird, but like,
yeah, I think that there was some. I think there's some weird stuff I saw with like. There's something in here about Clear Linux. Yeah,
it's just so cool. Like, if I wanted to, I could install like i3 in the DistroBox.
This is the one. This was listed on the DistroBox page.
Yep.
Let's
have a look.
So Japanese input on Clear Linux with Mozk via Ubuntu container with DistroBox. So you can just do cool. Japanese input. This is one of the great things with like the pass-through stuff, like, and it just be integrated with your system. Like it just works most of the time.
Yeah, it does. I really like how like DistroBox and like Flatpak and everything like this, they're all cross-platform. They all work on everything. It's like I don't need distro-specific stuff to do what I want. Like,
yeah,
it's cool to see. It's cool because I like the distinction between a stable base system and then having like some wildly unstable, I don't know, like fully testing Gentoo like install if I want to. Like, for example, I want to do like Musel LLVM. Sure, do it in a different box and it will just work.
Yeah, I've been really tempted when if I eventually move away from this Arch system to just stick something more just boring on there, whether it's Fedora, yeah. whether it's Probably wouldn't be Ubuntu just because the dependencies are a bit too old, but maybe like I don't know, a immutable system, for example, maybe, and then just do all of the fun stuff inside of a DistroBox and just I'm guessing that's part of the reason why you are interested in like this immutable stuff, that you can just have this this neat little system and then just do the
immutable thing again. It was just a joke.
Okay, yeah, sure, it's a joke, so it's not a joke anymore. Like, we can't keep using that.
it's made me realize, like, before I did this, I was like, oh, I would never use something like Silver Blue or something like that, because it wouldn't work for me. No, it does. Like, there are going to be those people who don't want that, and that's perfectly okay. You know, Linux is all about choice. You can use whatever you want, but the choice of using it that we have is cool. Like, it's cool that I can do this.
Because probably immutable systems have been around for a bit, but I think the tooling to make it really useful, realistically, has probably only been around for like Flatpak's only gotten a wide selection of applications maybe in the past couple of years. DistroBox is, I don't know when that came out now.
I
want to say at least a year or two at this point, surely.
Yeah.
But now these immutable systems are genuinely viable. I think for a lot of people, they're still not going to be what they want. Because there are some people out there, like me right now, I like having this system where it might just die. If I do something wrong, it might just break.
Yeah, it's like how I run like Unstable Xenia. It's fun. If something breaks, cool. Like, it's a fix it. That's fun. But people don't like that.
And with these immutable systems, a lot of people don't realize, like, they are customizable. They're just customizable at a different point. Yeah. People want to be able, like, you know, the traditional way of customizing a system is you are modifying all the packages at runtime. You have this installed system, and you can just change whatever you want. But the way you do it with an immutable system is all that stuff tends to be modified, but you're modifying it at the image creation time. So it's a very different way, and I think the reason why a lot of people are worried about them is the documentation on that isn't as extensive. Like, everybody knows how to modify, you know, everybody knows how to install an Ubuntu package and all that stuff, but most people don't realize how to modify an OS tree and how to, like, build a SquashFS image and all of this sort of stuff. And there are some projects like Ublue that are trying to make that a lot more accessible. And I think time, it's going to happen. But right now, you know,
We are trying to, like, get there. With Xenia, especially, we have, like, this tool called FoxBuild, which you give it a config file, which is, like, four lines. It's, like, just what Git repo you want to build from. Mm-hmm. You can look this up on the wiki if you want. It's under rootfs generation. Obviously, this is not going to be for the average user. You know, the average user is not going to be creating their own images.
Sure.
But we've made it, like, pretty easy to just get in there and go, okay, I want to add this package. Or, for example, someone who had never used Gentoo before, never used Xenia, within the first 2 weeks, have made a XFCE stage for Xenia.
Wow.
It's just like, yeah, it's, I mean, most of this is the credit to, like, Catalyst on Gentoo. It's good. But yeah, I think BlendOS have a similar sort of thing. It's very interesting for me, because especially with Gentoo, people are used to that customizability down to the system level. So it's useful for me to expose these tools to people to be able to go, like, oh, you want, like, I don't know, you want, like, i3, go ahead. You want to run LLVM as your system compiler on Xenia, go ahead, do it. Like, it's how we offer, like, OpenRC and systemd at the same time. It's like, because we can do that, and I think that choice is cool.
And by having this separation between the modification and the system, if you break something, like, you make an image and, I don't know, Grub dies, you have, like, a broken Grub config, you could just go back to the old image that worked and just...
The Grub is always going to be fine.
No, I mean, like, if you're building your own image and you do something stupid with it.
So, well, even then, the way we install Grub only happens at the install. We only just reconfigure. So, okay.
Sure.
Yeah, let's say if
you break GNOME or something.
Yeah. What?
Bad plugin. I don't know.
I reboot. I change root.image to root.image.back because Fox update creates a backup for you. Well, not create, it's just, like, it's the old ones a backup. So it's like you've always got that safety net. And then if you, like, so because we have an overlay over user for, like, Fox merge, normally read only. Say if you make that read write, you do something stupid, you know, you rm-rf your user directory. I don't know. Because it's just an overlay, you can just go into recovery mode because it's just a subvolume on, like, BufferFS. Delete the subvolume, create it again, reboot, you're fine. Because of the way FoxMerge works with the like ported sets. Mm. I reboot, I run Fox Merge upgrade, and I've got all my packages back on the base system. So it's like, we've got those options. And that's what's cool about the mutable systems. There's not really a way beyond deleting the root image itself that you can actually mess up the system.
Okay. Besides, just running that command we saw before where you brick your memory.
Yeah, I mean, if you do something like that, yeah. I mean, I think it can technically... Okay, if you unmount slash root, which you can do, technically Xenia can survive an RM-RF on root. So it's like, you've got those options there.
But it's one of those things where you have to, like, actively go out of your way to break it. Like, it's not... Oh, yeah. You're not going to accidentally, I ran this thing. If I generate a grub config, for example, and the grub config is pointing to the wrong thing, it's like, well, I guess we're in recovery mode now.
Yeah, well, you don't even need to do that. With grub, you just press E at the menu, you can just change whatever you want. So it's like, yeah. And, like, with the people that use Xenia now, which is mainly Gensu users, they're not going to run RM-RF slash on accident. There is obviously, you know, if we get users that are like new to Linux, yes, that is going to happen because they're going to fall for some bait. It's happened countless times. But yeah, it's luckily we don't have to worry about a lot of that stuff because our users are very like, they want to use Xenia, not because, oh, they got recommended it by a friend. They want to use it because they see it as a cool thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're already kind of invested in it from the start.
If you ever see a command that has a giant string of numbers and a command that looks like it might be converting those numbers, do not run that command.
Oh, absolutely do run it and see what happens, because it's fun.
Yeah,
right now, RM-RF.
There are so many times I've seen these commands where it's like, yes, this is like some basic encoded. Is it passing into a bash shell or something? Like,
yeah.
Okay, just run the part without the bash and you'll work out very, very quickly what it is.
Yeah, it's like some base64 encoded, like,
yeah, exactly.
Installing like malware on your system.
Speaking of
On Xenia.
Speaking of installing malware on your system, it's occasionally used in GitHub repos where the way they recommend installing something is we have some install script and then just curl it, pipe it into bash.
Yeah. It's like, I get why people want it, because it's like a one-line thing and they don't need to do anything, but please don't do that, because it's like, and I'm guilty of this as well. Everyone has done this.
Yeah.
Right. But it is not worth it. Like, what if it's just like, even if it's not actively malicious, what if it's just not written well? And it has some bug which can kill your system. It's like, because it can happen. It's like, I quite like, I know this is a bit weird, but like the Docker documentation, when it tells you to use a convenience script, it's like, download this first, now check the script. Like, look at it. Because like, just run that one line, like, you don't know what you're running on your system, like, at all.
Yeah, the same is true with the AUR as well. I don't think people realize that a package build, you can run any command in a package build. The package build is just a bash script, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same sort of thing with e-builds. Mm-hmm. I will say the way Gensu does it is a bit nicer, in my opinion. Gensu has Guru, which is the Gensu user repository something. I'm sure you'll figure that out. It is just an actual e-build repository, so it just installs on your system and you just use Emerge like normal. Mm-hmm. So the good thing about that is you've got all the safeguards of Emerge. Like, people don't know this, but Emerge builds your package in a sandbox and it will tell you if it has violations. Like, in an e-build, you can't access the network at all. So it's like, it can be annoying, like, especially if you're using something like Go, which actively downloads stuff from the but there's ways around that. But like, the good thing about that is like, it's gonna be sandboxed, but yeah, you need to be careful, like, especially in AUR, like, as you said, the package build just basically being a bash script, you run whatever the fuck you want. It's like,
I'll often see these, like, there'll just be these long lines of RM commands, like deleting build files and stuff. It's like,
yeah,
I have no doubt there have been cases where someone has put the wrong path in there. It's caused some damage.
It's happened. It's definitely happened.
I'm looking at the Guru logo right now. That's a logo on their GitHub.
Let's see. Oh. Is that just the Genty logo in a box?
Oh, are you looking at a different place?
I don't know. Oh.
Yeah, the MS Paint drawing? Yeah.
I think someone might need to contact the Genty media team about that. That is something, that is.
It works, you know. It's a logo. It is what it is.
GVRV, you know, my favourite repository. that drawing of Larry the Cow, perfection. That is
Larry the Cow?
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Larry the Cow.
That's the Genty. It's a Genty mascot.
I didn't know it had a name. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Wait, what? There's lore behind Larry? Larry in his young years wearing designer suede hooves. Larry after he grew his black and white patches. What? What?
Oh, my. Have this in a badge. He's got some lore behind him. Today. He's used in like the documentation. If there's like a user in the Genty docs, it'll be Larry.
Huh. There are a lot of these like Linux mascots that I've never really looked into most of them. I'll play something like Super Tux Cart, for example, and there'll be a bunch of characters. I'm like, I recognize, like, there's Tux there, okay. There's the BSD Pufferfish, and it'll be like the painting application I'm blanking on the name on.
Credit,
thank you, yes. And the rest, I'm like, I have no idea who these characters are. Like, who are any of these?
Oh, it's brilliant. Talking about like mascots and that, the funny thing that's happened, so obviously with Fetch Talks, I know this is going to sound really out there, they have to be coded for the different distros, and if you don't know, I know you will, but like other people, NeoFetch has been dead for a long time. It's not actively maintained. So like, to do with NeoFetch, we have to have a fork. But anyway, the funny thing that's happened, as Xenia the mascot has got popular, people have put ASCII art of Xenia in different Fetch programs. So we have, like, mascots. If you run Fast Fetch on Xenia, you will get a Xenia, like, not our one, but you'll get, like, a mascot. If you run High Fetch, you'll also get one. It's like, I'll send you the High Fetch one, because, like, my Fast Fetch is broken. Oh, yeah, and if you didn't know, Fast Fetch was made by a Genty developer. Yeah, so, like, with High Fetch, you have, like, Xenia. We didn't do that. It just happened because Xenia has got so popular.
Oh, okay. I actually wasn't even like really super aware of the project until you brought it up.
No one really is.
Mm-hmm. Except the High Fetch developers, apparently.
Well, no, because this is just for the mascot, not the distro.
Oh, I thought, okay, yeah. Okay, right. I thought you meant okay, that makes sense. I was confused.
So it's like,
there.
Just because the mascot has got so popular, we haven't had to do nearly as much work.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Cool. So it's just like, you just sort of changed over and say, here we go.
Like, I didn't even realize this had, we had stuff in like High Fetch and stuff until very recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't even know what Fetch program I'm using at this point.
I not be using NeoFetch.
I changed what I was using a little while ago because the one I had, there was like a bunch of configuration that I wanted to do that I couldn't do with. I think I was using FastFetch before. What am I running? No, it is FastFetch. Okay, no.
Yeah, FastFetch is good.
No, I was running PFetch before. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
FastFetch
is very nice.
I
was just saying FastFetch is nice.
Right. I think PFetch was the one where I think you have to explicitly say what distro you're on. It's one of those very, very manual ones. But because of that, like, it's not doing lookup, so it's really fast.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Whereas NeoFetch was a bit rough.
Slow. NeoFetch is just a bash script, so it's like, it is very slow. Mm-hmm. Especially because people, like, especially on window managers, I've noticed, will just put it in their, like, bash RC. It's like having Neophage is genuinely going to slow you down if you're using it.
Never did that. Nope. Never happened.
Oh, no. Also.
No. Well, fast fetch is fine because what is this written in? I don't know. Something not bad.
C++ or C? I don't know.
Yeah. Something not C terrible. Languages.
Yeah. Made by a Gentoo developer. It's quite cool.
C. I'm thinking of another one that's written in Rust. I'm blanking on which one it is. One of the, probably a million of them.
It's going to be hundreds. Yeah. And every one of their GitHubs is going to have like three rocket ships next to the name. Blazing fast, memory safe, system fetch written in Rust.
Oh, and then you're over here like, I want to write all my configs in Python. It works. I know it.
Oh, dear.
I like Python. Python's nice.
I love Python. Yeah, it's brilliant. PFetch was actually written by the same guy who did NeoFetch. That's cool. There was one other project written by him. Called Hello World. Look at this. So it just prints Hello World. Some highlights here. Let's have a look.
Wait, what?
How big is it? Yeah, it uses a clean build is 3.8 gigabytes. It needs 33 gigabytes to compile in the target folder.
What?
Takes 2.5 hours to compile.
What? Wait.
It's basically just a mockery of like Rust.
Okay, no, I found it. Memory safe, blazing fast, configurable minimal Hello World written in Rust under one line of code. With few 774 dependencies. Yeah, that's your average web project right there. Yeah. I use what is the create react project or whatever it is.
Yeah, node modules being like 2 terabytes.
Jesus. 3.8. What are you, how I have to examine this afterwards. Wait, I love this.
Oh yeah, it's pretty good.
There's a translations folder. What? Oh, he just translates Hello World in other languages.
Yeah. And also, like, half of it is written, like so in Rust, I don't know Rust very well, but you can have, like, unsafe stuff. So it says it's memory safe, but, like, everything's just unsafe. It's like, yeah. It's hilarious.
What the hell is this?
Have you seen this bit? I'll just send it to you. So you know where I'm looking. It's just one library, as you can see, is the number list. Only says one, because that's how that works.
Just one lives you see the number list along. No, I was just looking at the code for this. This is terrifying.
Yeah, it is. This is like when you see like is odd or is even, you're like, I'm gonna take this to the extreme.
My favorite version of is odd or is even is the one where there's a billion if statements.
Yeah. My one is one where it's just it's like an is prime and it just returns no, and it's like 90% correct. So it's like
that's a great one actually.
And there's like issues on the GitHub where it's like, well, for this number it didn't work, and it's just like, yeah, but if you run it over like so many numbers, the average just comes close to 99%, and we don't care. Not fixed.
You know, it's not wrong.
Yeah.
It's not wrong. Brilliant.
You're right.
I'm good. Yep. I love the open source world. It's so stupid.
Oh, it's brilliant.
This is what I like. As much as I enjoy the like arguing about stupid things, when people are like, I'm just gonna have some fun with my code. Like this. There's nothing serious here. Like, it's just, it's intentionally dumb, it's intentionally broken, and it's just, like, writing it because you want to have some fun with it. Not because you need to do it. Yeah. Not because it's your job. Yeah. No, you just want to write some fun code.
Yeah. I mean, like, Xenia Linux started off like that. It's like, you just take something that you think's, like, just funny, because, like, being able to say you have Gentoo, but it's immutable, is inherently funny. It's just, like... That's why open source, I think, is like so cool in this community, because people aren't like 90% of people aren't doing it because it's like their job. They're doing it because this is fun and this is what I actually want to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But, you know, when you've got users asking you to do stuff and, you know, I get it. I get why some people get jaded by it.
Yeah,
especially 100%. Especially those like those developers that are making these crazy big web libraries. Not even crazy big, like crazy important web libraries. It's used by like Netflix and Amazon and Google, They don't get paid a cent for it.
I know. Oh, CoreJS, I think you're on about.
Think of 10 different examples.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't get like too many annoying issues because, again, most of our users are pretty like they know what they're doing.
Sure.
Like, the worst thing is when you get an issue and people just send you a screenshot, like, worse, they get a picture of their phone of their desktop. You can't read any of it. And it's like, and half the time it's like, say in a merge, for example, it tells you, if you want support, do this and send this to the person you're asking for support. And they will take a picture of that. It's like, how do you deal with that? It's like, yeah. Or in Xenia, for example, we'll get users who have installed like 50 packages to their base set. Mm-hmm. They update, it doesn't work. And then we're like, right, if you look at the documentation, it says here, here's how you fix this issue. Or please don't do this because we literally have this for example, Foxmerge. If you need a VPN or you need some drivers, that's what it's there for.
Yeah.
But like anything else, it isn't. And it's just like, yeah, I can see why people get very, you know, jaded. I think the way you put it is probably the best way to describe it.
I don't know how you even get yourself onto an Immuta version of Gen 2 and just treat it like it's a normal version. Like, Gen 2's right there. Oh. Like, just go use that one. What are you doing here? I'm not sure.
I think the main thing is, like, people in Gen 2 want to compile, like, a lot of things. Like, not everyone. Mm-hmm. Some people really are hellbent on, actually, use flags are cool, right? And people want to use that, and it's like, so they think Xenia is just going to be all the benefits of an immutable distro, but they can still use what they're used to, which is like, I see how it trips people up. I mean, you see it on like Fedora Silverplume, people will try and use DNF and it's like, it does take a bit of an adjustment, but yeah, some people just treat it like it's Gentoo. Like they don't even use our wrappers. They just use straight up a merge. And then they're like, oh, why is it telling me my system is read-only? Because it's immutable.
Well, here's what you do, right? So you do all the normal Xenia stuff, get it all set up, DistroBox, Gen 2, there you go, boom, yeah. You compile everything in there.
You use flags. Well, not everything in there.
Yeah. You can install 300 packages in there, compile them all you want, you'll be fine.
Yeah. And if you really want to, make your own image with whatever use flags you want, because you can do that on Xenia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you really. Or you can just use Foxmerge. If you really don't want Firefox to have telemetry built in and you want to just disable that with a use flag, go ahead, waste your CPU for 2 hours every week compiling Firefox. I don't mind. But please don't come to me when your system is so broken and then I have to point at the documentation and be like, I told you so.
Mm-hmm. So you offer both a OpenRC and a systemd image. Do you actually have like opinions about the two of them, or is it just like they're both supported by Gen 2, might as well offer them?
I'm very much of the opinion that I use systemd because I'm used to it. I don't use it because it's like one or the other. I've used both. Mm-hmm. I was on OpenRC when I made Xenia, so I did OpenRC. Catalyst integrates with it a bit nicer, so. With Catalyst, when you use OpenRC, you can define what services you want in the spec file. For systemd, you have to do that in the FS script, which is essentially just a script that runs afterwards, and you just run, you know, systemctl enable.
Mm-hmm.
OpenRC in Xenia right now is kind of deprecated, mainly because I don't have time really to check if stuff works with it, and it's like, this is obviously why systemd is popular, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone uses it. It's like the network effect, essentially. But yeah, I think people should use whatever they want. If you like systemd and you want to use it, go ahead. If you want to use OpenRC, use it. I just don't like when people get so like adversarial against it. They're like, they genuinely will see you use systemd and go, you're a bad person because you use systemd. And I'm like, come on.
I'm sure you've seen the you're a bad person because you use GNOME as well then.
Oh, yeah. That's funny because, like, so I used to be in the, like, Arch Linux Discord for a while, mm-hmm. and I posted some screenshots. People were like, you're using Gentoo. Why are you using GNOME? I'm like, you do realize Gentoo is about choice, right? It's not about putting 10 different compiler flags in your C flags and then everything runs slower. No, it's not about that. You know what I mean?
That's so weird. Like, what, you have to be using DWM? Like, what is the argument
they
here?
They genuinely said, like, why aren't you using a window manager? Like, okay, but I like GNOME. Like, let me use GNOME because I want to use it. Like, be my guest. Use DWM if you want. It's just not for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think as soon as you realize, like, Linux is, like, fundamentally, it's about choice. It's, like, it really, like, opens you up. And it's, like, now I'm, like, I mean, even I was guilty of this. I used to be like, well, why would you use a window manager, right? Mm-hmm. But then I used it for a bit, and I was like, okay, this is cool. I can see why people want to use this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, I get tired of, like, the arguments. Oh, there was one in, like, the Gentoo Discord server where people were tying it to political beliefs. They were saying, if you use systemd, we use OpenRC because we're ex-political, like, whatever. And got, like, so heated because it's tying, like, politics into a niche system. It's like, how does that make any sense?
That's where you close the Discord window, you go outside, yes. and you stare at the sun and just get some sunlight. Just go outside, touch some grass, just don't even worry about it. It's not, like, it's taken me a long time to realize it is not worth engaging with some people. Like, there are some people that are just too far gone that no matter what you say to them, like, there are people that, if they're willing to come to the table and have an actual discussion, sure. But
of course,
we're not agreeing, like, on the core fundamentals. If it's like, you think that your NIT system's a political belief, like, I don't know what I can say to you.
Yeah.
Like, you're a crazy person.
Yeah, and they always try and make it personal as well. And it's like, everyone's trying to get their last words in and, like, trying to be morally on top of this argument. At the end of the day, you're not going to change someone's opinion by shouting at them that using OpenRC is, like, using systemd is, like, some fundamental, like, wrongdoing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to get anywhere. And then there's been some nice discussions where it's like, oh, I use OpenRC because I like the init scripts because they're cool. And some people are like, oh, I use systemd because I like their service files. And that's, like, constructive.
Yeah.
I wish people would be like this, but they're not.
This is a lot of the discussion about Wayland and Xorg. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's just, there's a lot of people that are, at this point, very ingrained in, I'm never going to leave Xorg. I don't care what Wayland does. I don't care what my distros are doing. I don't care that Red Hat's pulling out of the project and no one's going to maintain it. I'm going to keep using it until the end of time. And that's okay. Right? Like, if you are running, here's the thing about Xorg. If you are running a T410, Xorg's going to keep working until the dependencies on the rest of your system start, like, misaligning. But, like, the hardware-wise, it's never going to stop working on that hardware.
Yeah. I mean, Wayland works okay on the T410.
Mm-hmm.
The only issue is you have to use the legacy renderer on Hyperland, and that meant my colors were inverted.
Mm-hmm.
This is fun. But, yeah, the thing is, like, I'm on X now, and people will, like, scream at me because of that, but it's like, yeah, but Wayland right now isn't working right for me. And it's like, that's fine. I'll switch when it's, like, ready for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Then there'll be people like saying, Wayland's been ready for 2 years. Yeah, but if I open Discord and it, like, stutters everywhere because I'm using an old NVIDIA driver, then yeah. It's like...
I don't... It's been ready for certain things for a while. Like, Fedora...
Yes.
Do you know how long when Fedora defaulted to Wayland? On GNOME?
Oh, no, it's been a long time.
2016.
Yeah.
Well, it was not ready in 2016.
the thing is, it was ready for me when I was on an AMD GPU.
It was ready,
and we got we got gifted NVIDIA and was like, I need to use this now to make sure it works on Xenia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh.
It was ready
development
and stuff like that. No, sorry, I keep cutting you off. It's all good.
It's like, with Wayland on, like, an NVIDIA GPU, it's like, I was previously, I was like, oh, Wayland's ready for everyone. Switch to it now. I don't care if you're using it. It's all Wayland. And then I went on an NVIDIA GPU and I was like, oh, this is why people were like, yeah, I'm going to have to stay with Xorg. And it's like, yeah, but I think we are definitely close, like very, very close. It's going to be soon.
Yeah, as we talked about, I don't know if it was before the show started, but we mentioned the 550 drivers. Like,
yes,
Carl
yes.
from System 76 is... He is hoping. They've got, well, System 76, because they're a manufacturer, they get like early OEM drivers. From what he's told me, from what I've heard, they are really good. I don't know. I don't know what range of hardware they've tested on. If it's like just, you know, 30 series and newer, it works great. And then if you're on like 10 series, because 10 series is like 7 or 8 years old at this point. It's a fairly old card. But my understanding is, at least on the new cards, 550 is supposed to be like the holy grail.
Yeah, I mean, with us, I'm on 535 because it's getting too stable. Mm-hmm. But with like, what I'm really looking forward to is NVK. NVK is cool.
Yeah,
like, and like the new Novu stuff that's coming in, like with GSPs and stuff. For the longest time, like if I load up like Fedora, say, that's going to use Novu on like a 30 series, it stutters everywhere, it's unusable. But then now, if like when it's ready, obviously I know it's still experimental in Mesa and stuff, The new card comes out as a GSP, so it will work on day one. And it's like, I think that's been one of the big things that stopped people physically switching to Linux, is like they see the horror stories about NVIDIA. Mm-hmm. And it just works like from a live USB out of the box, people will realize that, you know, that's when NVIDIA has got there in Linux.
For you personally, when NVK is ready, would you completely switch to it? Or do you have like some usage for CUDA that you would need the proprietary drivers for?
I don't need CUDA apart from like doing stupid testings. Mm-hmm. Just like me personally, yeah, I'm going to switch like as soon as I can. Mm-hmm. I will try it out, see if my games work. And if my games work, yeah, cool. I'm going to switch to it because it's just so cool. I don't really want to have to deal with the NVIDIA driver. Like, from a distro development standpoint, getting NVIDIA working has been hell. Like, it's awful. So not only are the boot arguments on Grub, you have to be completely different because you need to... Because GNOME specifically needs, like, so many requirements for it to even show you Wayland in the, like... selection thing. Mm-hmm. So you need to do so much stuff as a distro developer. Mm-hmm. But also, because we're senior, we can't tell people to do this themselves because they physically can't. So we have to ship this in an image. And it's like, when I don't have to do that, mm-hmm. like, and I don't have to make separate images for NVIDIA users, it is going to be the best. Right now, if you're on Xenia, mm-hmm. and you've got an NVIDIA card, your only option is GNOME Systemd, unless if you make your own specs.
Right.
But on everything else, you have all the options. So, yeah.
NVIDIA, like, it's weird, right? Because NVIDIA has had support for Linux for such a long time. And early on, NVIDIA's mm-hmm. support was really good. Because AMD's drivers back then were garbage.
Like, yeah, ATI was horrible.
Yeah, it's only in fairly recent years that, with all of this support for the Mesa project, like, you know, you have people from AMD directly contributing to Mesa. It's not like, you know, oh, we just happen to give them some documentation, all that. Like, there's a little bit of that from NVIDIA, like very, very light, not as much as they really would like. Honestly, what I want to see is NVIDIA, at least one full-time developer that they can let work on the NVK project as like a paid position.
I think the thing is for them, it's like, the funny thing with NVIDIA, so when like new games come out, mm-hmm. they are in contact with the devs and they make changes to their drivers to like make the games run better. Like, so the issue with NVIDIA fully open sourcing is it will break so many like patents and like, not patents, but like copyright from like game dev. And it's like, whereas with AMD, where they have it open source for so long, NVIDIA, like, they are actively not wanting to do this. Like, I think they're only really doing it now because of like people using Linux in like HPC mm-hmm. and using NVIDIA cards for like LLMs. So, for example, like the open source NVIDIA drivers, they don't support like sleep states
mm-hmm.
at all. So it's like the open source NVIDIA stuff is basically useless right now as a desktop user.
I understand them not wanting to open source their drivers because most people don't realize this, but AMD does have proprietary drivers. The Pro drivers are proprietary, and you need them to use OpenCL. At least with the OpenCL implementation, they had this some like Rust, the Rust CL stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All of that annoying. Yeah.
AMD Rockham is awful.
Yeah, the documentation is a lot better than it was. Now it actually lists which cards are supported, which is crazy.
Yeah.
There's like seven of
which
them.
Which they still don't support. Like, I'm lucky what card I have supports ROCm. Like, very lucky. They don't support a lot of them.
Well, the thing is, they do. That's the weird thing, right? Because it's not officially supported, but Debian, the Debian Rockham team has their own documentation and lists most cards as supported. But because they don't officially test them, because there's such... I'm not blaming the Rockham team for this, because it seems like AMD just has such little interest in like funding this project and actually making it good. Because there's like three people responding to issues on their GitHub.
Yeah, no, NVIDIA have a like stranglehold on the market for like with CUDA stuff that it's like AMD are fighting a very uphill battle.
Yeah.
It's not real, especially because they're a smaller company anyway. And they're not just making GPUs. Like, they've got everything else. It's like, they don't have a lot assigned to ROCm.
Yeah. And it was bad before, but now that NVIDIA's... Look, NVIDIA's not a GPU company anymore. They're an AI system integrator, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
And with the AI stuff, and it's only getting bigger, they're getting more and more and more money. Like, there's a reason why... I want to say it's like the sixth biggest company in the world. It's some stupid number. Top company.
It's most valuable. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a wide, like, big, and I wouldn't be surprised if within a couple of years they are like the top, because everyone is talking about AI. Everyone's like, AI this, AI that, and you know, this is the old saying where it's like, when there is a gold rush, you don't want to be digging for the gold, you want to be selling shovels. NVIDIA is the shovel. Like, everybody needs NVIDIA. Like, if you want to do AI stuff, you're not going to buy an AMD card. Maybe there'll be, like some market there for Intel. Maybe.
AMD have their, like, Instinct line.
Yeah.
Which are... And Intel do this too, where they have accelerators on the CPU to, like, specifically for this. But, like, everyone just goes to NVIDIA because what works on, like, PyTorch, for example, NVIDIA. What works in, like, what does everything use under the hood? CUDA, which is going to be NVIDIA only. And it's like, you know, you see the servers they sell, which have got, like, 8 H100s or something, and they're selling for, like, millions of pop. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's sad, but... I don't know. There's no way. Look, there's no way I can fix it. I can buy one card. I've got one card every 3 years. I'm not going to change anything.
Yeah, I can scream at NVIDIA as much as I want. They're not going to listen to me.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Hopefully, with like Red Hat going hard into Wayland, that'll be some sort of push from NVIDIA to like sort their stuff out. That's my hope.
I mean,
but maybe it's just cope. It might just be cope.
Red Hat just want a workable GNOME desktop. They're not too worried about much else, I don't think.
Yeah.
As long as it works for them as a like development environment, they don't care. So it's like, they're not going to push for like gaming, for example.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know.
We'll get there eventually. Yeah.
Or NVK, support the NVK and Nova project.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't willingly have an NVIDIA GPU. I was happier on my AMD GPU, but I kind of have to, like, support it. Right. So it's like, I may as well run it.
Mm-hmm. So
if you have the choice, don't buy it.
Yeah, no, I could buy whatever card I wanted. I specifically go AMD. I don't need to worry about testing weird things for users on different hardware. So I go with the thing that I know is going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
But with Xenia Linux, what are you planning to do with this? Because as you said earlier, it started as a joke, and now you've spent a lot of time working on it, and you've got this whole new website. Clearly, you're, like, going to keep it going and, like, for some amount of time in the future. But, like, what are your plans with it?
So, the main plan right now, like, immediate plan, get our build system back up and running, because that has been broken. It's a pain. It's the underpinning of every distro. You need to have updates, because when security updates come out, your users are going to scream at you if you're not up to date.
Mm-hmm.
The main stuff is, like, we've got the base there. Like, we don't need to worry about the really underlying technical stuff anymore. It's more about making it more of a seamless, like, user experience. Like, right now, for example, we don't have an ISO. We tell users to go get a Fedora ISO, boot into that, and then download our installer from there. Which is, it seems stupid, but it's like, it's the easiest way for us to do it at the moment.
Sure.
But that is not friendly at all to new users. Because everyone, when they search, I want a Linux distro, what they really want is a bootable live image.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big plan. I think Jack, who's also on this project with me, is developing that. A lot of it is just getting it, like, stable. Like, right now, we are still in alpha. Mm-hmm. There's issues, you know, as everything has issues. But trying to get those, like, issues that are actually going to affect people and stuff, getting them fixed, getting them through. The new website is a big one, because our old website, it looks cool. That's about it. It's not useful at all. So that's nearly done. Yeah, I suppose from there, it's just like continuing maintaining it and seeing where we go. I mean, there's some funny things you can do right now. Like, you can actually install Nix on Xenia Linux.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit stupid, because the way it works, because it's your overlays, the systemd unit is installed on an overlay, so it doesn't pick it up on boot, because systemd integrates with the initramfs with Draker, so the Nix daemon will not be started. You need to run systemd daemon reload and all stuff like that. So, like, writing documentation on, like, the weird things is probably quite good. And also, our documentation needs a rework. Some things are good. The install guide's, like, decent. For example, you can manually install Xenia, and we've got guides to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we kind of get people installed, and then it's like, well, where do I go from here?
Mm.
And we definitely need to document some stuff with that.
You have a documentation, though, which, you know, is something. Could be worse.
No, we didn't. When we first released, it was, here's how you use our horrible installer, and you're good. Yeah, so it's definitely better than it was. I do kind of focus on documentation, though, because it's like, when you come from where we were, which is Gentoo users, you can expect them to be, like, of a decent, like, you know, they're going to get by on their own. But as new people come in, which haven't used, like, Gentoo or haven't used something like Arch, it's like, we need to have that support in there for them, because if they have trouble installing it, then they're not going to use it, you know. If they see, oh, I need to download Fedora, they're not going to use it straight away. We've lost a user like that.
Right.
So it's like, making it more accessible is probably one of the biggest things. But, you know, we don't want to become Ubuntu. We don't want it to be something like a beginner distro, because it will never be a beginner distro.
Right.
But we want to make it more than just some niche thing that about five people in the world have heard of.
Well, hopefully after this, people have, you know, more people heard about it. Maybe someone's tried out and see what it's actually like. See what immutable gen do, what you could really do with it.
Yeah, I mean, please do, because I'll always be here to help, like, anyone. If you need help, we are absolutely here, like, for you. If you need us to, we will guide you through the install to get it working.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I love seeing what stupid things people do with it. Like, I love seeing when someone downloads it and 2 weeks later they're showing me XFCE on Xenia, or like they've completely ruined their system somehow. Like that's cool as well. So it's nice to see stuff like that.
One thing I did see in here was there was a specific comment about OpenRC and Flatpak. I actually didn't realize that Flatpaks on OpenRC didn't actually work properly. I had no idea about that.
Right, this is a debus thing.
Right.
This angers me. we've had this issue. If it's not, I'll send you the link. This issue was created, like, let's have a look. 6 months ago, Christ, that's a long time.
Okay.
So if the Flatpak has got, like, in the desktop file, it has dbus activatable, which is set to true, it will not launch on OpenRC because I think it's like the dbus broker. Mm. Like dbus on OpenRC is a bit different to systemd.
Right.
And it doesn't look in the place where Flatpak installs, like, the desktop files. Or the dbus service files, even.
Mm.
So if you install, like, most GNOME, like, Flatpaks, for example, use this. You click it, and it does nothing. So we can't fix it. We've tried. Like, we can't even fix this in config.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably, I don't want to put blame on anyone here because I don't know the root cause of this issue. But yeah, this is one of the reasons why, like, systemd for us is the main one we support, because it's just, it works like that. We don't have to do anything.
Hmm. I had never even heard there were issues. I guess because OpenRC is such a small use case anyway. Yeah.
It's like, it's the main one that people talk about against systemd.
Mm-hmm.
But the only real, like, distros that I know that really support it is, like, there's that Arch one, like Artix or something, but there's Alpine and there's Gentoo.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's it. Like, I'm sure there's some other ones that I'm missing there, but, like,
Debian is those, like, are the Debian sort of thing from Artix.
Yeah, yes, that's it. There's definitely ones out there, but, like, the main ones are very niche. Like, Gentoo is an Alpine, they're probably the biggest ones there, and people were generally, like, scared of Gentoo normally anyway. So it's like most of your users aren't using OpenRC, and it's like, yeah, it's and then again, you've got the whole thing of Gentoo. Everyone wants to use the packages from Portage, so not many people are using Flatpak on OpenRC.
Right.
So it's like, because it's a niche community, they're also not using Flatpak. They're not testing all these things that we're doing. So yeah.
And that's the problem we were getting to earlier, where if you're going to add something, you have to also be there to test it. So if you wanted to add, you know, XFCE, now all of a sudden you have to mess around with XFCE to make sure there's not specific issues with that.
I mean, that's why, like, we don't have XFCE supported. Even though someone did it, it doesn't mean that we can support it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we publish issues, images for XFCE, people use them and find an issue, and I go, what does that mean? And it's like, you know, that's not going to look great.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and that's also why we didn't support, like, NVIDIA for a long time, unless if he's using Novu, because I didn't have an NVIDIA card. I can't confidently say, like, I can't just add the drivers in there and expect it to work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, NVIDIA's a pain. I said about this earlier, but I had to, like, we said about this before the show, I had to make the image that I was going to use before I put my new card in, because otherwise I would not get a frame buffer.
So stupid.
Yeah.
But
NVK will save us, hopefully.
Hopefully. But I guess on that note, we should probably end off the show. We're closing in on the 2-hour mark now. So
it's been that long. It felt like 30 minutes.
Well, that means you had some fun. So,
all right, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. Let people know where they can find the project, and if anything else you want to mention, if there's any, like, people who want to shout out to help you out with the project, anything else.
SeniorLinux.com is our main website, which is not helpful. staging.seniorlinux.com, go there. You'll find at the bottom there, you'll also find links to our GitLab and our contact email and everything like that. There is a Discord server there as well. So if you like Discord, you've got us there as well. And we're on, like, Mastodon.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Anything else you want to mention, or is that pretty much it?
I think that's it. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been an honor.
Absolute pleasure. As for me, the main channel is Broody Robertson. I do Linux videos there 6 days a week. I've got the gaming channel, Broody on Games. Don't know what I'm playing there. Probably still making my way through Neptunia, but I'm getting close to the end. So maybe I'll be playing God of War 2? I don't know. Work it out. Also, The World End... Neo, The World Ends With You. I really hate the way they named the sequel. If you listen to the audio version of this, you can find the video version on YouTube at tech over tea. If you're watching the video version, you can find the audio version. Pretty much any podcast platform, search for Tech Over Tea. There is an RSS feed as well. Stick in your favorite app and you're good to go. So, give you the final word. What do you want to say?
If you're using Gentoo, if you're using Fedora, if you're using Ubuntu, I want you to rm-rf your system right now and install Xenia Linux for me.
Absolutely. I hear a rooster outside. See you guys later.